Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to an hour of Mind Power. But today we are going to be entering into a realm that not many of us ever have an opportunity to even explore. Many times we complain, we question, but we don't have answers. Now, what is this about? It is about working with doctors, their world, our world, and how can we be better at communicating? How can we get answers to questions? And is there a possibility that doctors may not have the answers? Well, my guest, Kevin Jones, Dr. Kevin Jones, is a man who has decided that he wants to be open. As a physician, he cares a great deal for his patients, but he found that one of the biggest areas of weakness between doctor and patient is communication. I want to welcome to the airwaves Dr. Kevin Jones. His publication is What Doctors Cannot Tell You. Dr. Jones, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Donna. Thanks.
I really found your book extremely interesting because it's coming from the professional experience that you have had as a physician. Anyone that has had a remote area of interest in finding out what it takes to train someone to be a medical doctor, it's really quite awesome. It's a very rigorous, intensive process. The human body is extremely complicated. What was it that made you decide that you wanted to get into the world of medicine?
You know, that's an interesting question. I think often what drives someone to medicine is the sort of obvious answers of you want to find a way to help people. You want to get an in on this area of knowledge that you hope to be very useful for people, and it is. And there's plenty of useful knowledge in medicine. I think what's interesting, though, is that I think one's perspective entering into a medical education is often very different than what one finds at the end. And entering into medical education, you have this perception that there are a lot of things that we know, and there are a lot of black and white, you know, confident, hard answers that we can provide for patients. And then by the end of your education, you realize that things aren't so black and white. The things are much more gray, and things are much more fuzzy. And that really the practice of medicine has much less to do with handing out these black and white answers and making, you know, clear answers for people, and more helping them to really, you know, find their way through the fog.
I think that your book is one of the most honest communications about the world of medicine. In the Western world, for so many generations, it has evolved into, let's put doctor on pedestal, they know it, and now we're going to the other processing where it's people that are educating themselves to a degree. They've got the internet, they've got all kinds of things, they've got resources at their fingertips that enable them to go into a doctor and ask questions, and that's not something doctors want. That's not something that often they're comfortable with yet.
I think you're right. It's not always comfortable with it. I think there are many physicians who want to be comfortable with it, and I think we're learning. Mm-hmm. You know, we're learning how to deal with questions. I think the key to asking questions as a patient is how you ask them. And I think that asking questions from the perspective of, I have a problem, you're an expert, and I want you to help me solve my problem. That's a very different perspective than coming in and telling the physician, well, I read this on the internet, this is what I have, and this is what you're going to do for me. Mm-hmm. It's asking questions in a way to encourage the physician to take a step down from the pedestal, but to be a team member, you know, to work with you through your challenges.
I think that is going to be more and more of the norm. I know that there's so many different modalities with medicine that people just don't have a clue. You have a patient coming in. They might have a pain in their leg, and it has something to do with their heart. They may have something affecting their head, and it's going to be down in the buttock area. The body is, to me, one of the most awesome living things, and it is so complex. You really have to, if you're a good physician, you have to be a good counselor, you have to be a detective, you have to know how to research, and the biggest thing is how to communicate with your patient. And you talk about Carl right in the very beginning of your book, a patient, the one patient that fired you. Would you share that story?
Yeah, so Carl had a very difficult problem, and he had a large tumor that was particularly located so that it made it very difficult for me as a cancer surgeon focused on those types of cancers to remove it and leave him with a very good functional leg. And so what I advised him to do was to think about removing the leg, that sometimes the decision to save a leg just because we can may lead to worse function than removing the leg, despite the fact that the newer, you know, fancier treatment would be to save his leg. And this was a very tough conversation for him. And he was not ready for it. Now, he had been through a lot before that point. He had seen a number of other physicians, and he was, I think, at the peak of frustration before he even met me. But that was difficult. He was not ready to participate in that decision making. And mm-hmm. so he asked to see another opinion, and I happily referred him to someone else who saw him and took good care of him, and it was fine. What was interesting to me was that the person I referred him to was my partner. And my partner was very worried about this, was very worried about this patient leaving me. I was new in practice. I had only been in practice a few months. And he was very worried about this patient, you know, leaving me. And so he tried to convince the patient to come back to me. And I just thought, you know what? What he needs is a conversation that he's okay with. And he was not okay with the conversation he was having with me. Maybe I was too blunt. Maybe I was straightforward in a way that he wasn't comfortable with. But what's critical is you have to have the match. You know, you have to have a patient and a physician that are going to get along and are going to be able to move forward. They don't have to be best friends. They don't have to be touchy-feely and emotional together. But they have to be able to communicate clearly and move forward as a team.
Trust and respect are, I think, the two components are very vital.
And they are.
I have a member of my family that has gone through some very, very excruciating physical conditions. He encountered one doctor who he was having a conversation with, and the doctor made a statement, "I'm a Western doctor. I am not interested in anything else. I think it's a waste of time." This individual in our family said, "That's it. I'm not interested in talking to this person because they're not going to communicate with me." He now has a physician that said, "All right, let's talk about these things," and has a whole different demeanor, and that's the doctor, the second one. He finally found one after meeting with a number of different ones, but this is someone that is wise enough to understand that this individual wants to communicate, wants to talk. And actually, it's been wonderful because this person as a patient is following the suggestions, and they're sound suggestions.
Absolutely. They don't want to get rid of that physician.
That's right.
That's exactly right. What I would hope that this book would help people create for themselves. I think there are a number of physicians out there who are more than willing to engage in that kind of a conversation. But I think many of them are waiting to be invited. I think that there are so many guards that people put up. You know, patients worry about, well, if I ask questions, I might be abandoned by my physician. And physicians say, well, if I offer really full information, patients are going to get disillusioned and leave and find another physician. Everybody's afraid of being abandoned, and so they don't speak directly with each other. And so I think, if you find a physician where you have initiated that kind of a conversation and it is working, by golly, don't leave. You know, keep that one around.
Now, Dr. Jones, I want people to know that you have studied English literature at Harvard and medicine at Johns Hopkins. You have been trained in orthopedic surgery at the University of Iowa. You also have been trained in surgical musculoskeletal oncology at the University of Toronto. You are seeing patients currently. You also are very much involved in research at Huntsman Cancer Institute and the University of Utah. Being a surgeon, your world involves modalities that the average individual doesn't even have a clue about. The sophistication of technology, the human body, all of this, it's an ongoing thing. You are never, ever going to stop learning. Nobody ever knows it all. And if you think you do, the human body says, excuse me, with some patient that walks in and you say, I don't get it. What is going on here? It's the blind going into the unknown universe of the human physiology, which I think is incredible. You bring so many points out in your book, and one of the points that you cover, one of the many points, is how sometimes the diagnosis process is so tricky. And I know there are people listening to this show today that are going to say, no kidding, it took them 3 years to find dot, 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 dot. How come they couldn't find it right away? How come an MRI didn't show the right information? Tell us about Elena. She was a young woman. That's a powerful story.
It's an amazing story, and yet it's I wish it were more rare, but it's not. So Elena was a young woman who at 15 had had pain in her thigh and her hip region for almost a year. And it was not a big pain. It was a mild kind of aching pain. And her family, her parents, she had great parents. She had a great pediatrician. And they had been struggling trying to find out what this was. They had gotten some radiographs or x-rays of the hip, and that had showed nothing. They had gotten an MRI of her spine to think maybe she had a pinched nerve that was just causing her to be irritated down in the thigh. They really had pulled out all the stops trying to find what was wrong with her hip. And I met her when, about a month after the last set of tests that she had had, after her family had basically said, okay, we're just not going to have an answer maybe, and maybe we just go back to trying to live and trying to, you know, go out and do fun things. We're in Utah, so go out and hike and be active. Ride your bike, you know, be outside. And about a month after that, in dance class, she was kicked by one of her classmates and fell to the floor and broke her thigh bone, her femur, and came to the ER. And it turned out that the break was right through a tumor in her thigh.
Oh, my goodness.
So I was called in because of that, because that's what I do, bone tumors. And so I came and met them, and we talked through things, and we made a plan, and it ended up being a cancer in that bone. And I heard about this whole story of having pain for a year and trying to find a diagnosis. And her mother brought me the imaging that they had gotten before. And what was amazing is that that imaging had probably missed what was probably a visible tumor by less than an inch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and had it been an MRI instead of an X-ray of the hip, it probably would have seen it, actually. Had it been a little bit broader field X-ray, it would have seen it. And so the key was that in the process of diagnosis, a physician has to guess well. That is the key. A physician has to guess, well, did her physician do anything wrong? Absolutely not. Was there anything malpractice or negligent? Not at all. This was a good physician doing a good job taking care of a patient, but they hadn't yet guessed correctly. And I think that what's so important to remember as a patient when all of us end up in medical care is that the physicians on the other side of the white coat are having to guess, which means that, number one, we need to be as clear as we can be communicating to them what's bothering us and what we've noticed. And number two, we have to keep the communication open so that when we make a diagnosis and we start moving down a path toward treatment, it's not the end of the road. That if something doesn't seem to be working out, we ask questions and we go back and we say, well, should we rethink this? Maybe we have the wrong diagnosis to begin with, and making it a team effort.
I think that as technology evolves more so that scans can be done of areas and the costs come down, which is probably going to be happening, as technology becomes more and more refined, I believe that that is going to be of great assistance. But we still, it's very, very tough for many doctors to be able to keep up to date with some of the latest technology. And I find that your statements in the book about how encouragement should be given to people to trust medicine by insisting on honesty. And I know there's the difficulty with a lot of people not wanting to hear certain things. We all have those moments.
Yeah.
But I think the honesty is important and the clarity is important. And in today's world, when physicians are so busy with patients that maybe the average time is 10 or 15 minutes, how in the blue blazes can a doctor even get enough information out of a patient? And I think doctors are demanding more time so that they can communicate with those patients, sort of like the horse and buggy doctors of days past. They knew their patients, they knew about their families. And in today's world, it's so busy. Do you think that there's going to be more of that opportunity?
It's hard to say. You know, obviously, we are in a cost crisis in healthcare, especially here in the United States. And there's no doubt that we have to think carefully as a society about how to solve that problem. Medicine simply costs more than we can afford as a society going forward. It's just too expensive. And so mm-hmm. there's certainly going to be many ways that we need to think carefully about that. What I think is interesting is that I think sometimes in an effort to be efficient with a physician's time, I think sometimes we actually spend more money because I think there are many things that are done. There are many tests that are ordered. There are many interventions that are provided that might not be the best and might actually be opted against by patients if the physician took an extra 30 seconds and sat down and explained some of the pros and cons. You know, and, mm-hmm. and so I'm a firm believer that conversations – good conversations in healthcare, even if they take a minute or two extra, are worth their weight in gold. I mean, people sue less. You know, there mm-hmm. there are fewer lawsuits when patients and physicians have had a good, positive communication. That is well evidenced in all the studies that have been done. That when there are good conversations, patients are less prone to sue their physician. When there are good
right.
conversations, there are many things that can be avoided in terms of interventions that might not be so clear-cut and a patient might opt against if they realize they had the option of
mm-hmm.
opting against.
Mm-hmm. I think that is something, in my experience as a counselor, that is something that when people are made aware of the fact that they have options, they have choices. I think in today's world, in our culture, for example, dealing with death, I've known a number
yeah.
of people that have opted out of certain treatments because they became aware, either knowing some other individuals, that there were certain treatments they chose not to take. And they said, well, I want to do what I want to do, and if this is going to be the end result and I'm only going to have like 6 months longer, thank you, I do not want to do that. I don't need to do that. Their family understands it. The physician talks with them. They make the person as comfortable as possible. And that person has made a choice. The person
yeah.
has made a choice, and it's respected. And I think in the minds of many people, they're terrified they won't have the right of choice. And I think your comments are so valid. Also, regarding diagnosis, you say when it comes to pathology, diagnosis, that you feel that in the medical profession, there's not a consistency among different expert pathologists, as we would think, because you can't have everything black and white. It just isn't going to be that way. And you say when a dogmatic dictum sent down from an internationally recognized expert is the best standard we have, it is rather disconcerting to learn that the dictum will be different dependent on which internationally recognized expert you happen to have at. Can we do better? Will we tell our patients how poorly we currently do? Coming from a doctor, those kinds of questions and in points of information that you share in the book are just, they're wonderful. I am really pleased with this. I just think it's terrific for someone from the medical profession to be so open. Have you been criticized harshly for this book by your own professional associates?
So here's the thing that I think is so funny, because so many people who interview me ask that question, assuming that I'm going to be hated and slandered and, you know, lambasted by my colleagues. Most colleagues in medicine have come and said, yeah, wow, straight on. You know, that it is exactly where things are. There are a few who say, look, I don't have time to talk to patients as much as you'd like me to. You know, there are some who say, that's crazy. Patients don't really want that information. But I don't find anybody coming to say, you're totally out of line and these uncertainties that you talk about are not realistic. Because in the world of medicine, physicians speak about these uncertainties with each other all the time. Our medical literature is full of discussions about disagreements, discussions about, you know, whether this or that is the right way to go, and there are different people coming down on different sides of the coin. And that is just the reality of medicine. What I found so interesting, you know, I'm not that far out of training. I've been in practice 4 years. What I found so interesting as I went through practice and went through training before that was watching how the conversations within, you know, behind the closed doors of medicine are often so different than the conversations out, you know, with the public. I find it fascinating that there have been a handful of headline articles in the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times. I mean, these big media outlets, there'd be headline articles about the controversy over testing for PSA, for prostate cancer. And this was, you know, this hot new topic. Well, PSA testing has been debated in medicine for way more than a decade. I mean, it is old news. And yet, we're just now seeming to have the debate in public. And so I think that really most of my colleagues have responded with, yeah, this is the way things are. The question is how open and clear can we and should we be with our patients?
I think people generally would rather have the truth than have a glossed over something, unless there's extenuating circumstances, to the best of your capacity. And, you know, these are things that are so important. You have a story in here that I just think is marvelous. And it's about a patient by the name of Barbara. And
yes,
that is an important story. And I think it's important for my audience to hear it, because our words make a difference. And this woman ended up with a challenge, and it was corrected, but because someone was listening. Tell us Barbara's story.
Yeah, so Barbara, this was an amazing story. So this was a woman I met when I was a medical student, and I was on a rotation on an internal medicine service, and Barbara came into the hospital pretty early in this rotation, and it was her second time in the hospital. She had been there 2 weeks before, and both times she came in basically in a coma because the salt levels in her bloodstream were so out of whack. And they were so out of whack because she was throwing up every single meal she would eat. She would throw up. And so in the process of basically, you know, spewing out the contents of her stomach, she was losing potassium. So she had a critical level of potassium in her blood. So she came in a coma. And what was interesting is that, you know, so here this woman, she can't talk to us because she's in a coma. No family came with her. And we were basing all of our treatment off of what we remembered from her time 2 weeks before. I hadn't been a part of that time 2 weeks before, but some of the team members had. And the whole discussion at that time was, how do we convince this woman to let us treat her for her bulimia, an eating disorder? They thought she was making herself throw up. And the reason they thought she was making herself throw up was because she had admitted at one point during their discussions on the last visit to using a drug called diuretics, which are drugs that we use to lower blood pressure. They're very powerful medications. She had admitted to using diuretics for weight loss. And diuretics are only used by the most sort of desperate eating disorder patients because they actually don't lower your weight at all, other than that they make you, you know, lose water. And so you end up, your weight lowers on the scale, but it's not fat weight. It's not getting healthier in any way. So it really self-dangerous people would use diuretics. And so this one word, diuretics, was used essentially to begin not trusting the patient, because it was then suspected that she had a diagnosis that meant that she was out to harm herself. And so then anything else she said wasn't trusted. They tried to observe her. They never found her making herself throw up, and then they decided, well, she must just be so convinced that food is evil that she doesn't even have to gag herself, that she throws up anyway. And this was the going conclusion. And so my task as a medical student was sit with her, talk with her, help us find out how we can convince her to get the psychiatric care that she needs. Well, as I talked to her, as she woke up a couple of days later, and she was not a very educated woman, she was a little rough around the edges, but she had never used diuretics. She had used what she called dietetic pills. That's not even a word, but it sounds a lot like diuretic. I can understand why they made that conclusion, but it turns out that she had tried some Trimfast or something like that, and it was 20 years ago. Her problem was that she was trying to do the right thing. She was trying to use things that would help her potassium level, which they had given her some pills to take. They had told her that orange juice and tomatoes had potassium, and she couldn't keep solid foods down, so she had been drinking nothing but orange juice and V8 for the two weeks that she had been home. Mm. Turns out that what she had wasn't an eating disorder. She had an ulcer in her stomach that was so bad that it had closed off the outflow from the stomach, which made her throw up every time she had any solid food. And clearly the V8 and the orange juice did not help that ulcer. They were so acidic. And this poor woman was almost completely missed because of one word, because she said dietetic, which again isn't even really a word, but it was misconstrued as something else. And so I think the key is that in our communication, it is so fragile between patients and physicians that you want to be clear with your physician. You want to be as clear as you can be. You want to make sure that each party is understanding the other. Ask your physician, repeat back to me what you've just heard from me. At the end of hearing about something from your physician, say, let me tell you what I've heard from you, so that we can be as clear as possible. Because this was just a mishap. And these were not bad physicians who had looked after. These were very smart physicians.
Mm-hmm.
But just a few letters, completely misconstrued and brought in the element of distrust.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's important. Doctor, could you stay with me another 15 minutes?
Oh, for sure.
Oh, I'd be delighted to have you. This is Donna Sebo. My guest today is Dr. Kevin Jones. His fabulous book is What Doctors Cannot Tell You. You can go to his website, doctorscannottellyou.com. He's going to stay with us a little bit longer because we're going to be chatting about the effects of a pharmaceutical industry on the physician's environment. So we're going to be taking a break in just a moment. And Dr. Kevin Jones, I just think that this book is worth its weight in gold, because your being a doctor enables people to realize that there are those physicians out there that they can have a dialogue with. And doctors don't need to feel intimidated when patients come in and say, well, I've done a lot of research on this, and this is what I see. And I have to tell you, one of the finest physicians I ever met, and I'm hoping he's still in practice, I knew him many years ago. I can remember before he accepted anybody as a patient, he had almost a 200 questionnaire that you had to fill out when you came in as a new patient. And he would go through you in his first visit, go through that questionnaire with you, and by golly, then he would give a very thorough exam. And it was amazing what he found. And he had been trained both in Western medicine, he was a surgeon, as well as in Asian medicine. So he had a cross-cultural factor that was quite interesting. But his time with his patients, he wanted them to be well. And there's so many things I remember that went wrong, that were not done properly in testing in my particular circumstance. Yeah, but he asked me questions afterwards, and he said, oh, this is what you need to know. It was amazing, and he listened. The very thing that you're discussing here, he listened. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we are going to be talking more with Dr. Kevin Jones. Don't go away. I think you're going to find the information interesting. We're going to be back in just a moment.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
An avatar is coming to the Seattle area. Lovingly known as Yogi Raj, he will be doing these upcoming events. Saturday, August 25th, 6 to 8 p.m., Healing and Enlightenment Workshop. This is free, an interactive event. Donations accepted. Location, Asian Resource Center, 1025 South King Street, Seattle, Washington, 98104. Tuesday, August 28th, Yogi Raj will be teaching and sharing his knowledge in a very special class at the Ascension Into Life Foundation. Visit ascensionintolifefoundation.org for more details. Friday, August 31st to Monday, September 3rd, Kundalini Kriya Yoga of Babaji Retreat with Yogi Raj. Location, Fort Warden, Port Townsend. Each of these events will offer you the opportunity to learn about the ancient Himalayan knowledge for self-mastery called Kundalini Kriya Yoga of Babaji. For more information, visit siddhanath.org. You can register for the event through northwestevents.eventbrite.com or call for reservations 909-907-9605. Have you ever had a friend tell you about a product they really believed in? Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Toprosin is a homeopathic cream that is just fabulous. I use it and my friends use it for relief of painful discomfort such as aching muscles and sore feet. Odorless, non-greasy, it is a product that belongs in everyone's medicine cabinet and first aid kit. Check out www.toprosin.com, that's T-O-P-R-I-C-I-N, and find out more information. You can order Toprosin online or call 800-959-1007, that's 800-959-1007. Be sure to give them the code DS30 and you'll receive a 30% discount. Toprosin, non-toxic, safe for children too. This is a product that really works. Try it. I think you'll like it.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. My guest today is Dr. Kevin Jones. His fabulous publication is What Doctors Cannot Tell You. Dr. Jones has been in practice for a few years, and he shares his observations, but not from a point of bashing anything, but from a point of giving you information. And that's what we need to understand. We need to become educated ourselves, and this book goes a long way to helping you as an individual become informed. Dr. Jones, I'm so glad you're able to stay with me for some extra time. In your book, and I'm quoting exactly from your book, Marketing to Patients or Physicians, Potential Conflicts of Interest from Physician Industry, Financial Relationships, and many other messy factors weigh in to complex decisions for patients, and you go into the discussion about statins, aggressive advertising, and you cover so much of this. What, as a doctor, irritates you the most about this environment in medicine?
You know, it's interesting because it is a reality that most advances in drugs and things like that come from companies that invest a lot of money in the process of generating new drug ideas and invest even more money in getting those drugs to the market, getting them FDA approved and all these kinds of things. And so, you know, I am fine with that, and I don't have a problem with the fact that's the reality of how we get new technologies in terms of drugs and implants and other things like that. The challenge, though, is in how do we deal with new technologies and how do we adopt them, how do we use them? And there's no doubt that a number of messy factors weigh in. In medicine and in the treatment side of medicine, when we're making decisions, we've agreed upon a diagnosis and we're moving forward toward treatment, there is still a lot of what I would call wiggle room. You know, there's still a fairly wide range of options to treat any condition. And what should decide, you know, which of the many options available should be selected is up for grabs. And there are people who use, science deciding that. There are other people who use personal experience. There are other people who, use fear of one or another treatments to decide it. And certainly marketing makes a difference in that world, in that there is so much wiggle room that things like marketing matter. And I think that we just always have to be careful because we want things to be better. Most new drugs, if they're better, are better on the range of a few percentage points than what was available before, if they're better at all. Hardly ever do we actually get head-to-head trials comparing two drugs in the same class. But if one's better, it's marginally better. And sometimes we want something better so badly that we're not really looking carefully at how marginally better something really is. And I think that the key for a patient to ask in this question is simply, tell me the other options. You know, so when you're talking to your physician and your physician says, you know, we're going to treat your condition with this drug or with that procedure, it's totally fair game for you to say, well, what other options did you think about along the way there? Even mm-hmm. if I say, yeah, I'm going to go with this, tell me what else you thought about and help me understand why you chose this one. And I think that's a very fair question. Again, not asking in an adversarial way, but asking to be taught about your health. I think hopefully that can open up some of the discussion.
You have a section in your book, and again, I'll quote directly from it, "Unacknowledged certainty haunts the history of coronary artery bypass graft." It's pronounced the abbreviation CABBAGE surgery, and this is the open chest surgery performed to revascularize the heart. And something that I have personally witnessed, and when I saw it in your book, I said, oh my goodness, this is a fact, that patients who go on heart bypass end up with at least 20% loss of measurable mental function. And I was chatting with someone about your book just yesterday and that comment, and they have a spouse. They said, oh my goodness, that is the truth, and the physician they had warned them of the particular condition, saying it may take 6 months for the brain to come back to its capacity, at least in their particular situation. That's what the doctor said. The doctor had been very, very open about this probability of an effect from a particular process of surgery. And so we were discussing this, and I thought, how many people are ever told this?
You know, that it's really incredible. And again, this book is not out to bash cardiac surgery. I mean, CABG surgery is one of the most effective surgeries known to man. I mean, it's amazing in how successful it's been. What's incredible to me is the story of how this came to be realized. And essentially, this was a term that was bandied about, you know, in doctors' lounges and in OR locker rooms, I think, for a number of years before anybody really dared to look at it straight in the face. And in those days, it was called pump head. I mean, it's sort of a, you know, makes you cringe to hear it almost.
Mm-hmm.
But this effect of putting patients on the pump that does the work of the heart while they're working on the heart, you know, during surgery. And what's amazing, you know, kudos to the CABG world in that they decided to actually look at it and decided to, you know, investigate it and see how bad it really was and see, you know, what are ways that they could, you know, maybe minimize it. I think there are lots of other similar types of things in other fields that we haven't even looked into yet
mm-hmm.
that are probably just as scary. And so I think a great question for a person to ask his or her physician is to say, you know, what is the complication or the adverse outcome about my whatever I'm coming up against, whether it's taking a new medicine or having a surgery? What is the adverse outcome that you worry most about? Not the list of things that the physician has to tell you legally on your consent form. Well, you can have this, 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 or this happen, all of which are sort of in the 1 in 50,000 range. But what are the things about this new treatment or this new surgery that give you pause, that make you think, is this the right thing for me? Because mm-hmm. every physician has that list in their head, and they don't always discuss it openly. But mm-hmm. most would be more than happy to discuss it openly if someone asked.
And I think it's important, too, in the patient-doctor relationship, going full circle to what you said before, is that the patient has to communicate with a doctor. The
Absolutely.
Doctor has got many people he or she is having to see. So they're not memory geniuses, and many times things are not written down correctly. I went into a doctor's office that I've been seeing for years, and the person said, oh, you've had a hysterectomy. I said, no, I haven't. Oh, yes, you have. No, I haven't. Someone had misplaced information, and of course the file was like 3 inches thick because I've been going to the doctor for so many years just for regular checkups. And this is something that I looked at and I said, mm-hmm, she made an assumption. And sometimes those assumptions are wrong. She misread what was in front of her.
Yeah.
And you need to have that awareness that lots of times staff change. There may be something where they can't read the handwriting of the person that's written a report. There's just so much that goes on. And I really think your book goes a long, long way to encouraging open communication, giving facts about the doctor's world, and presenting the variables of information that instead of coming from a positioning of fear, we can then feel like we have more choices for ourselves and for our loved one, maybe even for a stranger. And it could be more helpful to a physician because doctors need to know. Just like the one case you talked about, a woman using a word that wasn't a real word, and our brains are working and they misinterpreted what she said. And, of course, she was in a coma for a couple of days, so they were doing the best that they could do with the situation at hand. But just so much that goes on, and I think since medical care is just wild and woolly and we are just going through so much distortion right now, it's such a political football, and so many people are dealing with issues day in and day out, I think your book goes a long way to helping the average individual understand that they can be more involved in their own wellness from a positioning of understanding that they have the right to choose different things, they have a right to question, and so do the doctors. Doctors need to add questions, too. Your website is What Your Doctor Can Tell You Cannot Tell You. I'm sorry.
Right. No, doctorscannottellyou.com.
Thank you for correcting me. doctorscannottellyou.com. Dr. Kevin Jones, it has been an absolute delight having you as a guest. I wish you nothing but success. And I'll tell you, I really think that this book is going to make the difference in so many people's lives and in their thinking, which I know is one of the purposes for writing this out. And I'm sure your colleagues appreciate it, too. Thank you for being my guest.
Absolutely. Thank you, Donna, for having me.
It's been a pleasure. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedrose accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com. to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Are you taking too many oral pain pills and concerned about the side effects? Are you having trouble getting to sleep at night because of the pain? Well, I'm Lou Paradise. I had the same problems you have, cured my pain, eliminated pain pills and their side effects by developing Toprasin, pain relief and healing cream. Toprasin relieves pain without the side effects. It doesn't burn, it doesn't smell, and it doesn't stain. But don't take my word for it. Doctors, pharmacists, and pain specialists are using and recommending Toprasin and ending the suffering for thousands of people just like you. We know you hurt. We want to help. We are so sure that Toprasin will work for you, we offer a money-back guarantee. So if you want the pain relief without the side effects, ask for Toprasin. Toprasin is available at Duane Reade, Quick Check Pharmacies, and Wegmans. Ask for Toprasin or call 1-800-959-1007 for a store near you. That's 1-800-959-1007. Toprasin, the last pain medicine you'll ever need, and you can sleep on that.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. I'm so delighted that you've been able to share this time with me. Dr. Kevin Jones is a wonderful, wonderful surgeon, physician, and he is a man that I think has dared to do something that has been desired by others, but they didn't choose to do it. He's done it. He's talking out. He is speaking up, and he is saying, let's have some changes. Let's have some changes on both sides of the fence, both with patients as well as with the doctors. It will make a difference. And I just think it is exceedingly important. I really feel that the more we can be proactive in our own understanding, our own wellness, and I've been through a number of experiences in my own life where I realized that I didn't even ask questions. I have experienced the good, the bad, and the ugly, and I'll tell you, I just am so fortunate that I can be aware of certain things. And I know lots of times it only comes from experience and from listening to what other people have gone through and learning from them and asking questions. And it's a part of a modality of thinking that is important for us to break through. Well, telephone lines are open. 888-627-6008 is the telephone number to call if you would like to chat with me for a few minutes. I would be delighted to do it. I'd be happy to light up your life with a little bit of insight. I want to let you know about my guest tomorrow. We're going to be talking with Vanessa Talbot in Australia. Her book is titled Extraordinary You. Now, Vanessa, I learned about, and I just said, got to have this lady on the show. So she's going to be with us tomorrow because this is a woman that had it all, lost it all, and built a whole new life. And this is the kind of inspiration I think we all need, to realize that whatever life throws our way, whatever challenges we may have, we can work with them, we can adapt, and we can become reinvigorated. And I think this is really, really terrific. Oh, I wanted to share with you a story because of having Dr. Jones on today. I wanted to share a story with you.
about physicians, and this is true. I had a client in San Diego, California, come to see me on one of my trips to the Golden State, and we got to chatting after we had had a session, which happens often with the people that I meet with, and she was telling me about a particular experience that she had had. She'd been out gardening, and she came in from gardening this one day. All of a sudden, her left hand was swollen. I mean, this was blood red. It was swollen. This hand was just a mess. And then her face started to swell. Bumps. Very strange. Her face and her left hand. Well, there was a clinic that she had known about in her neighborhood, so she goes to the clinic, and she sees a doctor, and they said, wow, we've never seen anything like this before. And so they give her salves, they give her antibiotic shots. They did all kinds of things. Now, she went to them two or three times, and she kept getting worse and worse and worse. Well, she was so miserable. The medicine that she had been given, everything that was applied, and these were sincere doctors. My goodness, she was in bad shape. So it turned out she ended up going to the clinic in the evening. They had evening hours available. And there's this older doctor that is there. Now, this woman was in her late 50s. She goes in, she sees this doctor. The regular doctor she saw was off. He worked during the daytime hours, and she tells the doctor what's happening. Her face is just a mess. Her hand is just a mess. He looks at her, walks over to a cabinet, hands her a bottle, and said, just rub this all over you, and you'll be fine. She looked at him. She looked at the bottle. I mean, he made a diagnosis in just a few minutes. She looked at the bottle. It was calamine lotion. She said, what's this? Calamine lotion. He says, there you have the measles. Now, this woman was almost 60 years old. She was astonished. She said, I don't get this. I've got measles. I'm almost 60 years old. This is broken at my hand and my face. He said, I can no more explain to you why the measles came out on your hand and your face only. But he said, you have the measles. Well, she looked at him. She said, why in the world didn't the other doctors see it? He said, my dear, I've been a doctor for many, many years. I have seen things that the young physicians have never, ever seen, nor are they likely to see in our Western world. You have the measles. Use the calamine lotion, you'll be fine. It'll take a week, you'll just be great. Dump all the medicine. Don't use any of it. Within a week, she was over the whole thing. Now, she didn't have a fever. It was just what the body did. The human body is amazing. It's exceedingly complex. And she said it was a very, very vivid lesson to her that there are people that have had experience at seeing things. She thought it was something she'd encountered in the garden, and it was a simple case of measles. True story. I'm not exaggerating. So it's very easy to be critical of someone, but if you have physicians that have not been in third world countries, have never seen these diseases, which are in many respects non-existent in our modern world today because of vaccines and other things, when it comes up, it can be totally perplexing because they've never dealt with it. These were very common diseases that almost were expected. People were put in isolation, it affected the immune system, it created some problems, but if you survived it, you were stronger, many times healthier. This was something that really was quite a story for me to listen to. And I thought, this is true. Life is sort of like that on multiple levels, isn't it? If you're a younger person, you can't possibly have had the experience that someone in their 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s have had. That's why it's very important, in my view, for people to communicate between generations. We must be willing to pass along our knowledge and understanding. I'm sure there was an interesting conversation at that clinic after this woman's experience. This is Donna Siebel. I know we're out of time. Gee, I hope you join me tomorrow. It's so nice that you were able to be with me today. Have a magnificent day or evening wherever you are. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. God bless. Have a magnificent day or evening. I'll chat with you tomorrow. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Siebel Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Siebel Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.